Preston and Steve Fun Size.
We have a guest who I'm excited to speak to. It was recommended to me that I watch his special on Hulu by Casey. And Casey had said, look, you know, and you know, normally when somebody's recommending something, hey, I want you to watch a show. It's about blah, 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 so-and-so. These people, they discover this, and happens, and they give you a plot line. Casey just goes, I don't want to tell you what it's about. I would just like you to watch it. And he said, here's what drew me into it. When I started watching it, because Nick Murphy had recommended he watch it, was the opening text on the screen that says, put away your cell phone.
Right.
Set this aside now and just watch what you're about to watch. In so many words, it says something like that.
Almost the kind of preamble you would get if you were at a live show.
Which is what this is. Okay, so it's a stage show. It's a one-man show. It was performed 552 times on a small stage in New York City. So Casey sold me on it by not really telling me much about it.
And we've been talking about not doing the disservice of revealing anything to people who are still going to... We gave a homework assignment, but it needs to be...
Yeah.
That needs to be... That integrity needs to be maintained.
Which is why I'm not sure how we're going to do this interview.
I'm going to find out
how we're going to do it. But it's funny because... Well, you know what? Let me just welcome on board, and then we can do all these other musings. Please welcome. By the way, the show is called Derek Del Guadio's In and of Itself, and it's directed by Frank Oz, which is pretty awesome, too. Please welcome Derek Del Guadio to the show this morning. Derek, good morning.
Good morning.
Do you see a bit of a conundrum here on conducting an interview about this special, about this show, that we don't really want people to know anything about, yet we want to talk to you, the creator, about it?
Yeah, I'm on the other end of it, so I understand the difficulty.
Yeah. Let's talk about the fact that this show ran 552 times in New York City. Were you doing multiple shows a day, or was it one show a day?
On weekends, I did two. Man. So, yeah, one show a day. Weekends, it was two.
That's a lot.
It is, and, you know, but the... I love a lot of the reasoning behind why you did what you did. And again, we're going to be delicate with our conversation because we want to make sure people experience it the right way. Well, let's start with that. I haven't encountered something on this order where people have seemed that committed to allowing other people to experience something. You know, it used to be years ago, don't reveal the ending of Psycho. Don't do that. People seem to be very encouraged to allow people to experience in the way you, Derek, obviously had intended it to be experienced. That's got to be very cool for you as the artist to see that sort of grassroots effort to maintain that.
It is. I mean, I never asked anyone to stay quiet about it. That's just something that's taken on a life of its own. I think that the work, I guess, asks that of the audience to kind of not try to describe it, but it's not something that I actually set out to achieve.
Right.
Now, when you began performing this stage show, and I don't know how things work in the world of live entertainment, live stage shows in New York City, did it immediately catch, or did it take a few times for word to get out and people started hearing about it, and then the theater started filling up?
Yeah, it was a snowball. I mean, at first, people didn't know what to do with it, and then slowly but surely, people started to show up and tell their friends to show up, and it kind of, you know, became a thing.
What is cool here is that, so I'm a big fan of, you know, for the classification, you're, the whole show is, in a way, about labels and how we're perceived and what our reality is and other concepts. But there's illusion involved, and there's all sorts of other things that are finally woven into it. However, what happens is that you make the experience of the audience. You're cutting to the audience a lot, or at least Frank Oz, who directed it, does, so that you can see the reaction. This is something that's atypical a lot in shows like this, because I think the audience is as much of what's going on as are you.
Sure, they're the other half of the equation. I mean, it's a show about identity. Ultimately, I mean, if we were to boil it down to what it's about, and you know, you can't have identity in a vacuum. You need others for that to be relevant. So the audience was the other half of the equation. So they were, you know, a really integral part of the experience.
Derek, yesterday I listened to a podcast with Frank Oz and Mike Birbiglia, who's seen the show twice on stage, and listening to Frank talk about his experience of filming this with you, it was interesting because he talked a lot about stuff that they shot that ended up not a part of the finished product, a lot of backstage stuff.
Yeah.
I'm really curious as to what your experience was working with him and allowing your vision for what the stage show was to become his vision for what the movie was. How did that collaboration work?
Well, I never let it become his vision. That's how it worked. We worked on it together, and he was very, very kind to let me have input and to help shape what this film is, because he knew that ultimately it was my, you know, it was what I wanted it to be on stage, and he wanted to make sure that it was ultimately what I wanted it to be on film as well.
Yeah, the people who get that usually allow the vision to remain intact and try to help, you know, you as the artist reach the realization. I was curious because I was reading an interview and you said that in a way the film is truer to the show than the live show. And explain how you feel and why you feel that is.
Well, the show for me was not one show. It was the entirety of the shows. It was all of them. I saw every single individual performance strung together as the actual one performance. And you can't experience that live. You can only experience the part of it, whatever one show you're seeing. And I think the film captures the totality of what I was trying to make. And so you can't see that, live. And so I think the film captures it really well.
It's funny because there's a dynamic that exists in, and there's a smaller audience for this, and people who will watch it will see it, and people who have already seen it know what I'm talking about. And that intimacy is something that's very cool. But there is an energy that is often sought by people trying to translate something like this to film, and it fails. Mm. What do you believe is the one key element that makes this work the way it does as a film?
I think part of it was the intimacy that was actually in the live performance. I think a lot of live performances, there's an energy that's usually bigger because they have to be for the stage, and we just didn't do that live. And so what happened was it actually looks more like film, like if there's such a thing as acting in it, it looks more like film acting than stage acting.
Right.
So yeah. I think that's a big part of it.
The show is obviously it's rehearsed. It's very calculated. You have specific points and things that need to be done on each and every performance along the way for this to carry on, which it has, and that'll make sense for people who've seen it once they see what happens in the show, that it does continue to carry on. All these shows are linked together, but. Did it, with that in mind, and there's a story and it's autobiographical, did it evolve over those 552 performances in any way, or did it stay exactly the same every single time without obviously the interactions with the audience are going to be a little bit different, but the rehearsed portions of it, were they the same or did they change along the way?
In New York, the text stayed the same and the actions for the most part stayed the same, but it was more of the unspoken things that actually evolved over time, which sounds strange, but it's kind of the in-between moments that actually found their place as time went on.
Was it hard to muster those emotions sometimes? I know what you're talking about, like physically seeing you, watching you react and some of the things that happened. Was it hard to make that happen night after night after night?
Yes and no. Yes, in that it was draining to do that. But no, in that I was fortunate enough to be saying things that I believed in and wanted to convey, and so it wasn't difficult in the sense that I really was just trying to make it legible each night and wanted to really, like, here's another opportunity to do this, and so it actually deepened over time, as opposed to, I think, a lot of stage shows. You know, an actor has to, like, say someone else's words over the course of months, and sometimes they lose the meaning over time. But for me, it deepened, and it actually made it, I wouldn't say easier in terms of doing, but easier in terms of accessing, because I understood what I was doing better by the end of it than I did at the beginning.
So Stephen Colbert is one of the producers on the show, and he had obviously seen the show. From the time he had seen the show, was obviously swept up by it. How soon before he's making the entrees and attempting to help orchestrate this, or did you, in fact, know that he was a fan and come in that way?
Yeah, no, he wasn't a part of it until I would say maybe 6 months after he saw it, maybe even longer. And it was accidental. I mean, I was searching for people to help, produce and fund it. Really, I wanted HBO to buy it or something and help us produce it in terms of the finances. And so I had a relationship with Steven just based on going on his show once, and felt comfortable enough asking him who I should talk to at Showtime, because CBS's company is also affiliated with Showtime. And so he, instead of pointing me in the right direction, he said, can I help you shepherd this over? And I said, sure. And we did, and we tried to convince Showtime that it was worth making, and they didn't think it was. So he said, and then neither did a lot of other people. And he said, I want to help you make this. I said, I want to help you make this, and I meant it. So he and his wife, Evelyn, had a side conversation and came back and said they wanted to do it themselves, which is an incredible, leap of faith on their part, and forever grateful for it.
In 1994, my dad took me and my brothers to see a movie called Forrest Gump. And we asked my dad, why are we going to see this movie and what is it about? And my dad replied with, it's about this guy's life. And I've been thinking about that in terms of your movie and your show, because you don't want to tell anybody anything about it. You want them to experience it on their own. But it also is it's a bit defined by the parameters of your life. And so I'm curious as to when this is finished, what comes next.
That's what I was wondering.
That's a really good question. I did this show to kind of, in a sense, understand who I am in the context of what I do in the world, and how to be in it in a way that's not as defined as people might want it to be. And the irony is now I'm the guy who did that show.
So, you can't help it, though. You no one, and it's a salient point, is no one escapes existence without labels. It's just what it is. I wanted to ask you, as the hype builds and it becomes the thing, is that something you're adroit at processing, or do you sort of demur from it as you become the buzz thing now?
Yeah, no, I'm trying to let myself appreciate the response that the film's getting, which is really nice, but also not think about it or hold on to it, so that I can be sane enough to move on to the next thing.
Nice. If you're just tuning in, it's Derek DelGuadio with Derek DelGuadio's In and of Itself, which is on Hulu. Now it's got a 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It became very, very popular on stage, and celebrities like you had mentioned, Colbert and Frank Oz, who got involved, who would become fans of it. When celebrities would show up in your audience, did you know it before you would perform the show, or would you happen to find out about that later on?
Sometimes I would know. It depends on if my assistant can get back to me and tell me in time, or if they showed up late or something like that, I might not find out. And sometimes it worked out to my disadvantage, in the sense that, one night, everyone was buzzing that Bradley Cooper was in the audience. Uh-huh. And all the ushers, Bradley Cooper's here. And I walked out, and I can see everyone, cause it's a small theater. And I went through the entire performance, and by the end of it, I'm like, Bradley Cooper wasn't in the audience. and sure enough, afterwards, they're like, yeah, it was a different Bradley Cooper. He just had the same name.
Oh, my God.
And as it turned out, because I was told Bradley Cooper was in the audience and kind of wondering where he might be, I missed Oscar Isaac sitting in the front row.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I recognized him, but it didn't register until it was over. I was like, oh, wait, that was – and then there were Star Wars fans waiting outside the theater to have a sign.
That's wild. So during the course of the show, Nick had pointed out, you tell a lot of stories, and these are life stories. And I just wanted to ask if every single story that you told on stage is, in fact, a true story.
Yes. I understand, even though I tell people it is in the show, I understand why some might think that they're not true, but yeah, they are.
I wanted to also ask you concerning, I'm a big fan of the movie The Prestige. I love it, Christopher Nolan's film. And you served as, I assume, a technical advisor on that film?
Yeah, I was a consultant on it when I was young, much younger.
How many of the things that are done in that, I know Nolan is very precise, were done in camera? Was there any CGI fudgery or anything of that nature?
There was a little bit, no, a lot of it was in camera, and really it was especially the stuff that the actors themselves did, not like some of the bigger illusions, like the door transposition and stuff like that, but yeah, like, you know, Christian Bale doing some sleight of hand and Hugh Jackman, yeah, that they absolutely took it very seriously too. It was really, really nice because a lot of actors, or some actors, wouldn't have, and they did. They're real, you know, craftsmen.
Derek, you got a book coming out called A Moral Man, A True Story and Other Lies. It's out next month. What is that book about? Is it touch on in and of itself? Is it a book version of that, or what can we expect?
There's some intersections. It's a true story that I've taken from my life and turned into kind of an allegory about truth and reality, and yeah, it's a parable of sorts.
Okay. Is it titled A Moral Man or Amoral Man?
Well, that's for you to decide.
Okay.
So with this, so the book is going to be the next big focus, and are you currently kicking around ideas for another stage show or another medium, perhaps television, films? Who knows?
Yeah, I think who knows is the answer. I think right now, I mean, obviously, it's hard to think about anything live right now for several reasons.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think finding other mediums to play in is what I'm interested in.
I think the obvious next step, Derek, would be doing goofy dances on TikTok. That would be...
Sure.
You ever been to Philly, Derek? Derek, have you ever been to Philadelphia?
Oh, Philadelphia. Yeah. It's a great town. I love it.
Would you take the show on the road ever? And if so, could you bring it here when things open back up?
No. It's been retired. It really was a very, very difficult show to do, and I can't imagine doing it on the road. Right. just as it technically is very, very hard on me. But other things happily.
All right. Well, listen, Derek, we wanted to get you on. We were blown away by it. It's a very moving piece. It was moving for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I cried on a number of occasions, and I mean that in a, I don't know, it was just emotionally, it touched me. It was really great. And obviously there's amazing spectacles to be seen and a great story and a lot of emotion and a really cool thing. So we're happy for your success and looking forward to checking out the book. So thanks a bunch for giving us a call this morning.
Well, thank you so much for having me, guys. You guys are great. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Derek DelGuadio, guys. It is called In and of Itself. Derek DelGuadio's In and of Itself, and it's on Hulu. And
God bless you for knowing the pronunciation. I would never have. His last name is
DelGuadio.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we pulled that off without giving anything away.
Yeah. I think we did okay, right?
Yeah I think we did well.
It's one of the things that you do... You do care about people getting it the right way.
Yeah. You know why? Because I want them to experience the way that I did.
Yeah.
And because
in the nude.
I felt it was better being naked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but listen, when I was watching it, I'm sitting there and there was like everybody else in my house doing things. And I just, they would come in and look at me and I had this really intense look on my face. Like, you know, they're over here talking, saying something to me, blah, 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 blah. And that's kind of, they could tell by my reaction that I'm like, what you're saying to me right now is not registering because I am focused on this right now.
I didn't even want to hit pause. You know, I had to go to the bathroom at one point and I was like, I want to make it through this whole thing.
I'm just going to piss right here.
I did. And my girlfriend got upset.
Yeah. Wow.
No, but the recommendation of putting your phone down is a really good and strong one and should be adhered to.
Yeah. I never watched TV like that.
I know.
And
you did.
And I did.
I did it. I did it. Hey, mister, I love your play.
Hey, mister.
More podcasts from Preston and Steve available at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.